Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Initech.
No, you're working at Initech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million...
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world, and I am a material girl or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Oh, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke. Don't do
if I had $1 million.
Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Hall. Ricky on the board. S&P futures, I'd say be seated. Another 166 points, another 3%. NASDAQ futures down 623, 3.3%. Dow not as bad, only down 1,183, 2.9%. Corn's down, wheat's down, oil's down, you name it. So much for yesterday being the bottom. At least not yet. And we'll see when or if that happens anytime soon, or whether we're talking about a total readjustment here of the market. Let's kind of hope we don't have that at least suddenly, but I don't know. It sure seems like it's happening pretty suddenly here. Do we have Mr. Kevin?
Good morning. Yes, you do.
How are you, bud? Hope your shorts spoo.
That sounds like a condition.
It would be a really good condition to have right now.
Yeah, but I'm just talking about it. Sounds like something that requires a doctor.
Retires a doctor or else being younger.
Yeah, well, that too.
Yeah. So anyway, I was looking last night. It looked like we were down just a little bit. Now this morning, all of a sudden, is China maybe, because China just retaliated on the tariffs, 34%. It's hard to keep track of all the... what's actually going on and what's causing what. Oil's down to 62.61. I don't think anybody's going to be wanting to drill any more there than at 70. But that's another issue. We have the VIX, which is making things pretty difficult on anybody trying to trade stuff for people. It's up to 38. It's up 8 points this morning. And Kevin, since my day is my week in 1987, I hope I'm not seeing that again here. Once was enough. First of all, the VIX is... How can I say this, Kevin? Where the hell is Russell when I need him? Every option has an implied volatility. Meaning, if you were to sit and say, okay, I know the price of IBM. I know how long it is to expiration. I know the interest rate we're going to use. I know the strike price. I know the strike of the price of the stock. There's a variable missing, and the variable missing is something that gives you some kind of an idea of how volatile IBM either going to be, has been, whatever you want to call it. And there was all kinds of attempts at this other number really before I got to grad school, and finally Black-Scholes said, screw it, we're going to use the average standard deviation of the movement in the stock over like the last year. And then there's three different kinds of volatility. There's historical volatility, what the stock was in the past, which gives you some indication maybe of what it's going to be in the future. Not 100%, but it gives you some kind of idea. The stock jumps around a lot versus one that doesn't. The other variable is going to be higher, so the option prices are going to be higher vis-a-vis whatever the other variables are. The other is future volatility, which unless, you know, you're somebody better than us, Kevin, nobody knows, right? And then there's what's something called the implied volatility. There's a price at where the option is trading. So if you say, okay, let's plug the price in. Normally you want to plug whatever your volatility is to find the price the option should be. Should is a big word. Or you can plug the price of the option in and work backwards and do the math and say, at this price, the option is trading at a 40 volatility, or a 30, or a 50. Well, that's called the implied volatility. And when things get like this, options, for lack of a better term, especially on the put side, are really the cost of insurance. Well, anybody who doesn't think that the cost of insurance is a liar today than it was 6 months ago, 10 years ago, whatever, you know, I mean, of course it's higher. So there came a product where people said, let's just trade the, quote, the volatility. And it was the OEX, now it's the SPX, where the market looks at the implied volatility of the SPX, and that number is a calculation which they call the VIX. And it's some percentage of the first week and for some percentage of the first month, and that's the implied volatility piece. The only problem is it's not really, what would you say the word would be, Kevin? It's not really a product, okay? So when you start doing your, what happens when people decide the market's in trouble? Because I was in the pit in 1987, I noticed firsthand. I mean, nobody, a lot of people know an awful lot of more stuff than me, Kevin, I guarantee you that. That's why I have all you guys on the show to fill me in on stuff I don't know. But nobody knows more about what happens when everybody in the world wants insurance. And maybe Dave Murphy, our friend, was out where all the fires were in California, has the same sort of feeling of how much is fire insurance when we can see the fire. The VIX does not operate, or the implied volatility. People are always anxious to sell people puts in a normal market. Hey, we're selling insurance the right price. We'll short the stock. I don't want to get too technical here. We'll hedge it somehow. Well, now all of a sudden, my firm...
Too late on that too technical thing, though.
Yeah, I know. Well, put it this way. If I'm just one schlump in the OEX pit, which I was, and all of a sudden, maybe I would, if I had to, on a day when market was going down, but I didn't think it was going crazy, and you wanted to buy some out-of-the-money puts, out-of-the-money insurance from me, I might sell you 50, I might sell you 100, I might sell you 200. But there's no way I was going to sell you like 2,000. I mean, I just wasn't big enough for that. But it doesn't matter. There were 350 other people, not to mention the whole rest of the world. If they saw the price coming up, they would come in and sell them. Well, all of a sudden, it reaches the point where nobody can sell them. And the broker looks at you and says, where are you in these puts? And you say, nowhere. Well, for a guy like me, that happened maybe relatively quickly. And for some of these big firms, you know, like Belvedere and Wolverine and all these people that bring all these, that have all this capital and make all these markets, it's going to happen a lot later. But they have risk problems too. I don't care who you are. You can be Citadel, and your number might be 10,000 puts, not 400,000 puts. So at some point, you reach the stage where the VIX is liable to go from, it might take forever to get from 10 to 20, and maybe even a little of forever to go from 20 to 25, but maybe not much to go from 25 to 60. And Russell knows this. He's written books on it. I know it because I was standing there. I don't think the rest of the world knows that, Kevin. And you know what? I'll be honest with you. I hope they never find out. And if we have one more day like today, and assuming we stay down here, which maybe hopefully we won't, we're going to find out. And that's not going to be good. Now, did I totally put everybody have no idea what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I think that was probably not the most scintillating way to open the show.
But it's the truth, man.
But it is the truth, yeah. Okay.
I to be honest with you, I'm kind of stunned on this much this morning. I think we might go lower as people, you know, look at actually what's happening with the size of the tax increase and the fact that if they're really talking about, you know, it's kind of odd to me, Kevin, is it seemed like in the first administration, I'm going to say Trump wasn't the only one. I mean, a lot of people didn't like what China was doing. So kind of zeroed in on China. And, hell, you've talked about it. And so is Kevin, so is Russell, about how many firms essentially were, what's the word, encouraged to drop their footprint in China. And a lot of these people, really, going to Korea was okay. Going to Thailand was okay. Going to Vietnam was okay. And now, all of a sudden, I think those people, Apple being probably the first one on the list, is stunned because the tariffs in Vietnam and those places are just as high as China. And I don't... What do you think they think? Do you think they got hosed? Do you think they were lied to? Or do they think that just that's just the way... I mean, I think that's a lot, don't you? I mean, Apple's down another 10 points this morning. It's 193. That's 30 points. That's 15% in two days.
I don't think the point is to encourage them to go to Vietnam. I, you know, when 6 years ago, 7 years ago, when China got tariffed, the result was a lot of people going to places like Vietnam. But I don't believe that they were designed to encourage people to go to Vietnam. I just think that's what happened. Right now, the emphasis for, again, we can debate, you know, whether it's going to be effective or not, but right now the emphasis is on manufacturing in the U.S., which then would preclude Vietnam as well as China.
But there was no declared war on world trade. It was a war against China because they were bad people and stealing our stuff. Right?
Yeah.
There was no mention that any import anywhere is all of a sudden a problem. So there was really no reason.
It was throughout the most recent presidential campaign.
Okay. But that's, a lot of people say stuff during a campaign. But I mean, right now, as a U.S. citizen, right now in your face, and I don't think anybody can debate this, you're talking about, and I don't, you know what, I think their estimates are too high, Kevin, but which maybe would be good. Right now we're talking about a $600 billion tax increase and probably a 10 to 15% increase in prices across the board, maybe more.
And yeah, I've been reading like 5% on groceries, 1,500 to 2,000 on automobiles. That's what I've been getting.
Okay. Well, I'm going to say somewhere in there. I mean, and we'll find out. I mean, it's individual.
That's not 15% across the board, and nor is it going to be 15% across the board, because there, you know, I think it was Bessent that said, well, you know, the first thing you can do is just buy stuff that's produced in America, and then you won't, you know, you probably won't be paying that same amount. Part two of that is you're already seeing people who have production facilities in the United States are, and I forget whether it was Ford or GM said they're going to start, and it was more than just Belvedere, it was, you know, other plants too. They're saying, well, we might as, you know, we're just going to start producing there. In the U.S., they already have a facility. They're just going to start pushing it to capacity.
Okay, but
you're going to see some shifts.
But the people who may, at the end of the day, benefit from this. In the meantime, there's going to be this massive hole, and the people that are paying are probably not the people that are going to benefit. That's a problem to me.
Yeah.
I mean, for my clients that have a lot of money in stocks. Okay, now I guess we can say 5 years from now the market will be back up. Simple fact is they've gotten annihilated the last few days. We've got puts on everybody, so we didn't do near as bad as anybody else, but it wasn't a winning day. The idea that what did Wayne say yesterday? Liechtenstein exports dentures. Well, fortunately, I don't have those, but for those that do, if they have to pay up 25% for dentures, they're just out 25%, Kevin. I don't know where exactly they get that money back. Do you?
No, this is very clearly not going to give anybody any short-term benefit. Question is, are you going to get long-term benefit?
Well, is the U different? That's my problem with all this.
I guess the U is not different when you're talking about, you know, older people who need dentures, because, you know, they're not going to say, oh goody, manufacturing jobs are coming. I sort of get that, but you know what's really going on here? Let's spell it out this way. If you look at the right track, wrong track polls, they've been underwater for 20 years, and they're at a high now. They're at a high of the last 20 years of only 42%.
Of what?
You know, our leadership, everything that's going on. You talk about the management class, and been presiding over a decline, over a declining civilization. The people's belief that their children are going to have a better life than they do is gone. We've got debt of what, 35 trillion plus? It's accelerating. We're paying a trillion two on interest on the debt. The decay in the cities, the decay in our education system, the decay of individual health, of people's health, overall health, physical health, mental health, our food's poisoning us. That this whole idea that there's a promise of a better life, I think everybody has a stake in that. And instead, we have stagnant wages. We have fewer people on a real, you know, adjusted for inflation. We have fewer people making more money than their parents did. That wasn't true 25 years ago. That definitely was not true. Housing prices, we used, the historical norm was about three times the median income. Now it's six times. And the whole, you know, uniparty agenda doesn't address any of this. They're just sort of presiding over, managing this rather than providing any leadership on it. And so, you know, Congress, presidents, you know, all the leadership infrastructure, they've known this. They've known this all along. And instead, we have our congressional leaders just accumulate personal wealth while they're in office. And then, and we see censorship, we see coercion, we see people getting canceled if they have contrary views. We saw that, with vaccines. We saw that, we see the pharma, you know, media is totally compromised by its dependence on pharmaceutical company advertising money. And if we're going to count on Congress, we're just boinked. They hide their actions.
not every person in Congress is rolling in dough. Not every one of them is a crook.
No. Just the most prominent leaders.
But we also have the executive branch has been labeled with that as well.
I'm not arguing with you. I'm just, we're agreeing on where we are.
This was
you brought up the dentures thing, and you know they're kind of screwed either way as it stands now, because it is all really expensive anyway. But at least you have an older class that would really love to believe that their grandchildren have a fighting chance at a better life. And so if we're going to reshape this, maybe it needs to be something very radical, and maybe it's going to suck for a little while, and maybe it's just going to crash and burn and not work.
But I
know if we consider, you know, if we keep muddling along at the status quo, we're screwed.
Well, how about
crash we, and burn anyway.
But every group, every time either one of the parties is in office, and one of the reasons why you are absolutely correct when you say we're heading the wrong way, every single time one of the parties is in office, whoever it is, and the part that is scathing to either side is that in the last 32 years we've had 16 years of power from either side.
Yeah, that's why I said uniparty, Tom. I'm all right,
on board. So where in this program we've got our issue that a few people make all the money in this country. And for up until yesterday,
and that gap is getting worse.
And up until yesterday, the only thing saving, I'll say, the top 40% was the market and their 401ks and their IRAs and their investments. All kinds of people that have had stock that start out at 20 that's 400 and they've got more money than they ever thought they were going to have. They have more wealth, but since they don't, it's still in stock, it's not quote money yet. But the issues that you and I would point out, and Ronald Reagan did this. This is the Republican mantra. He came in and he cut taxes for pretty much everybody, but really zeroed in on the top group. And all of a sudden, they had this big problem where, oh my God, we're running out of dough. So within 18 months, they put through a tax increase. But the tax increase was in the payroll taxes and stuff, so it affected the other people. So the people who got help weren't necessarily the people who paid the new tax. Well, now this is coming in. Instead of seeing any of this, if I was a president that liked to do decrees, and I call them executive orders, I would decree that all patents on drugs all of a sudden are terminated after 10 years, not 17. Rather than Right now, the people that we know are going to start paying higher prices for stuff immediately. And if you're buying the stuff, it's certainly more. And on the tax part of it, somebody's going to buy something. We know that the everyman, the person who hasn't had the wage increase over the last 20 years that you very accurately said, now all of a sudden is paying this tax on the front end. I don't see where the hell he gets it, Kevin. I think as I went through my buddy's budget a few weeks ago, who's on Social Security and he's on blood thinners. The last thing that friggin' guy needs is other prices to go up on him without anything else going up. I don't see how you, with the promise that 5 years from now, after he's gone, somebody else is going to make money out of it. You and I both understand the problem. I don't see this gets anywhere to it, to be honest with you. And at the end of the day, he just said it in his thing, he's going to have a huge tax decrease, okay, for the middle class. Well, okay, but the middle class isn't necessarily, first of all, who is the middle class anymore? But we're probably up to 45,000, which a lot of families, by the way, it's less than the individual's median income. 45,000, if you have a house, got to be have a family, you don't pay any federal income taxes. That doesn't mean you don't pay any taxes. It means you still pay payroll taxes, you pay your property taxes, you pay your sales taxes, you pay God knows what else, a fortune to go over every bridge or any toll. So if you lower, and with the inflation of the last 7 or 8 years, I'll include both of the last two, in my opinion, bozo presidents, we've had an inflation where that person, if he's keeping up with it wage-wise, they used to make $40,000, is now making, let's say, $50,000. Let's be charitable. He hasn't gained anything, but he's jumped an income tax spot from 12% to 22%, right? I might be off by a little bit. So on the extra 10%, he's paying more taxes. So the biggest gainer in all this is the government. And still, somehow or another, they manage to be in deep debt, which is even more bizarre. So, yeah, I think there needs to be a massive tone change, but let's start with the people that have the money. Do the people at Pfizer have to make that kind of dough? Let's stop giving people money for COVID shots, for God's sake.
Yeah, and I am really, really interested to see what happens with pharmaceuticals. I mean, right now, it looks like the top of the HHS agenda is food. And that's not bad, but they have started getting rid of a whole lot of people who were the big pharmacy industry advocates have started getting cleaned out of that agency.
Well, you don't know that, who those people are.
What's going to happen may be nothing. It may be a big, fat, fizzle-out nothing. I don't know, but boy, I'm with you on that. I sure would like to see their wings clip severely.
I think before you, for, you know, Trump is a transactional guy. Anything, every all these deals have to be. I don't know that any of the countries that they're in there, if you went through them line by line, whether you'd even think we were getting screwed. I don't know. I'm sure from some we are.
Some are lining up to negotiate now. India chief among them.
Well, I mean, when you have something like yesterday, the market carnage, and today so far, then you got a guy coming out there. Let's make a deal with me personally. Let's just say it's not my style, but I mean, so okay, follow it through, Kevin. What now? We're going to have, let's say, antibiotics, penicillin that nobody is. Boy, show my age.
By the way, before you get too far away from it, when you said those bozo presidents, why would you insult bozo like that?
I know.
What did bozo ever do to you?
I never won the big grand prize game.
Okay. Did you try it? Did you get on Bozo ever?
What was the waiting list on that, Kevin, at one point? Was it 7 years, God, 8 years?
People would put in their Bozo ticket requests when their kids were born so that they could take them when they were in, you know, first grade.
Wow. Well, and all those guys, you know, it's we talk about people that worked all day. All the guys on Channel 9, all the dudes that were on, like, the Garfield Goose were part of the Bozo Circus or... The Ray Rayner show. I mean, they all did all that stuff all day long. Wasn't Bob Bell, didn't he have a show in the morning, then he was Oliver O'Oliver, and then he did something in the afternoon?
No, Bob Bell was Bozo.
Who was the guy? It was Oliver.
Ray Rayner was Oliver O. Oliver.
Okay, and he had a show in the morning and a show in the afternoon, didn't he?
Oh, yeah. Well, he had the breakfast show, too.
Yeah. They got a full day's work out of those dudes over Channel 9.
Yeah. But we digress.
Yeah, but, you know, what I'm saying is I don't know how much more. Let's walk this through. By the way, that's why I'm dying to have you on this morning, because I was saying yesterday on the show that I think in your area, you guys actually might be, when I say you guys, the Michiana area that is a lot of smaller companies, I think that your area might very shortly be one of the places that benefits by the smaller parts that goes in cars and those kinds of things. But we're talking about, 5 years for a car plant probably, and maybe a couple of years for a plant that does all the motors and all the other kind of stuff. I'm sure the door handles we can figure out how to stamp out pretty quick. But I don't.
I've got a company I do a lot of work with, from an education standpoint, Lippert Components. They're a huge company. They supply the RV industry, and they must have 90 plants, not just in the area here, but around the world. But a big concentration of them here. They're going to benefit. My buddy Joe, who's a pretty regular listener, his company does treatments for like water towers and such for manufacturing companies, for factories, and he says that his clients are putting on extra shifts now and have been for a little while.
Well, I think there's
there is going to be some ramp up in manufacturing. It's just, if you think it's going to ramp up in the Chicago area, where are they going to put it?
Well, there's all kinds of room.
Say that again?
There's all kinds of room.
Where?
What do you mean where? Take the Orange Line to Midway. You see about 25 factories dying for a new owner.
Okay. Good.
With rail, with everything. But here's
an opportunity.
But there's,
because the shell is there. If the shell is there, then you could probably get it started a hell of a lot faster than if you have to acquire land and ramp up, get everything ramped up, find your labor force and so on. Chances are that if the factory closed any time in the last 10 years, there's a latent labor force available for you.
It's probably longer than that. But here, I have my issues with all this stuff, Kevin, are not necessarily political. They have to do with what I perceive to be an amazing lack of detail in lying to the population. I think that if no matter what it is, at some level, trade is good. I mean, I spent a lot of time learning about the history of economic thought and why economics happened in the first place. And I know you know a lot of this, even maybe you didn't have classes in it, but it's common sense to you. Trade is a good thing. Everybody has, I use the term, comparative advantage and something. And whether you could be blind and yet you could be a gunsmith. And maybe you're so good at it that even somebody else who could be a gunsmith says, you know what, why don't we let this guy do the gunsmith stuff and I'll do something else that I'm better at. The trade is inherently a very, very good thing. It's not a bad thing. Now when you start doing stuff about offshoring slave labor and offshoring pollution like Carl's always talking about, well, that adds a level of
using H-1Bs or all of the things that go with it.
Yeah, all the things that go with it. Now, yesterday, and I didn't want to answer them because I was kind of tired of answering everybody. Somebody came up with Stellantis says that it costs 38% less to assemble a vehicle in Canada than here. So Carl writes me something to the extent that Trump is absolutely right. It's cheaper up there. And okay, so why did I do this, Kevin? I don't know. I spent the next hour digging into the rates, the difference in rates of auto workers in Canada and the U.S. And I broke. And what the weird part is, AI says it's way more expensive up there. I don't know where AI is getting that. I didn't believe that for a second. Well, they claim that because of, if you add all the setup costs and all the other stuff, which evidently are more expensive up there, somehow or another AI's got it more expensive up in Canada than here, which I honestly don't believe, even though it's AI. That's the best AI could do. I think I'm short in AI. So I dig through a bunch of other stuff. Well, it turns out, according to most of the other stuff, the full-in cost for an automaker is less than Canada than here by about 30%. All right, which out of all the different, I probably went through 10 articles. That seems to be the number. But now, if you go into the, dig into the detail of that even more, which, of course, Trump's not going to tell you about, and maybe Kyle didn't either, most of that has to do with you don't have to pay hospitalization for people because they're already covered in Canada. Well, I don't know that that's a reason to hate Canadians, is it? The reason why...
Why do you jump to hate Canadians? That's an odd statement.
The idea that somehow they're doing something wrong, and we need... I mean, Carl's point was, we need to make up 38%. They're screwing us. If that's the reason, I don't know if it's necessarily screwing us, do you? It's just difference in policy.
You can take that one up with Carl, but if they don't have to pay health insurance, yes, they do. It's just how you pay it.
Okay, but I'm saying, yeah, if you and I open up a plan up there...
If it doesn't show up in your marginal cost there, it's going to show up in your tax bill.
Okay, but I don't know, I'm not sure where that comes from. Does it come from... I mean, my thought was, it seems to me, when you go to Toronto, it's kind of like Chicago without the bad areas. What's so different? Everybody looks to me, the drinks are the same price, and so somebody must be making some dough up there.
I have not been to Toronto, but I hear it's a lovely city.
It's nice. Well, I tell you what, they got the best hot dogs. They take so much pride in their street vending, it's scary.
Yeah, they may have the best hot dogs, but damn, you know, are they letting us... Is that because they're not letting us get Chicago hot dogs into the country? I mean, damn it. You know, there's some lines you can't cross here, Tom.
Well, I went to the... what's the name of the stadium? For game... the big one they can open and shut. The thing, it's huge. It has a hotel where the people were messing around with the hotel.
Sky Dome. I don't know what they call it.
But, you know, there's regular ballpark food in there. So I didn't have any. Well, I leave, and all of a sudden there's like these 15 trucks parked there. Every one of them's like a hot dog, Polish, you know, whatever else you have. Kevin, it's a life's work for these guys. They have like 15 to 20 different, like, mustard salads, some other kind of relish. They're all lined up. So you get this big dog, and you're trying to find a way to get all this crap on the way. It's outstanding. And I went there in the wintertime. They had this big park in the middle. Everybody skates. Imagine that, Canada. Everybody skates. Well, all these hot dog trucks are lined up. They totally ring the skating place. So you skate for a while. You have a hot dog. You skate for a while. I'm like, what could be? I'm not a good skater, but you were. I mean, what a nice day, huh? Anyway, but they, I don't know what their tax stuff is. Do they do property taxes? They do income taxes? I have no idea.
I don't know how they extract the tax for their health care system, but, you know, it's got to come from somewhere.
But I'm saying, if you and I, if we're in Detroit and we go, okay, we got to pay these guys, what is it? It's got to be $2,500 a month or more now to insure a family, isn't it? Well, if we go over there, we get to pay the guy the same amount. We don't have to pay that. I don't know that that's a horrendous shot it across the bow, is it? I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's our system's kind of screwed up. That could be.
It could very well be.
I'm saying, my point is, every one of these things, when you dig into the detail, what did Dave Murphy say yesterday? That we put tax on two islands that don't even have any people?
Yeah, that's because you know how that conversation started. I texted to you via that thread by a mistake. Boy, was that a can of worms.
Well, it's all over the CNBC this morning. So you must have texted them, too.
Yeah, probably.
I
meant to just send it directly to you. I should apologize to everybody for opening that can of worms.
Well, let's take a something that's near and dear to me, because I was talking to this buddy of mine recently. Let's say we're making penicillin in India or someplace. Okay, now why are we making penicillin in India? There's shipping costs involved, there's this involved. Oh, by the way, the latest little tidbit on the... You know how many hours it takes to assemble a car?
Offhand, I know you've spotted that number before, so
Somewhere between 18 and 35. Now, this is parts.
But that's almost a, it's a pretty broad.
Well, I mean, a more expensive car is going to take more if it's got power seats and all that stuff.
Okay.
But I'm saying this is, you're bringing the parts to the line. Obviously, there's man hours in the parts someplace, and you're assembling the thing. So, we're even if in one place you're paying 50 an hour, in the other place you're paying 10, you're talking about 30 hours times 40. That's $1,200. That's got to be less than the cost of shipping it back. So somewhere, sometime, you got to dig into the detail. But here, this one, you're gonna be better than me at this. We decide we're gonna we'd like to have penicillin. Let's pick penicillin, even though I don't think anybody uses it anymore. Let's say it's only being made in India, because we've heard a lot about it. A lot of antibiotics aren't even made here, right? Let's say penicillin in India. Let's just pick one out of the top of our behind. Now, they're making it over there. Who exactly rides herd on whether the place is clean or not? Now, we know everybody at the FDA, nobody does their job. They're all government employees. They're all idiots. We need to fire them all. But let's just say that the places here are probably inspected a little more than the places there. I don't know that for sure, but let's say part of the reason they're there is regulatory. All right? Now, it doesn't mean the place is dirty, but it also means if who the hell can I sue over there? But let's now we put this tariff on them, 25%. So tomorrow, if I think the only thing you use penicillin for is like gum disease, Kevin. So tomorrow you go to the dentist and the guy goes, ah, geez, Kevin, when's the last time you came in for a cleaning? You need some penicillin pills. Now you're going to pay 25% more or something. They might eat some of it. So say you're going to pay 20% more. Now what? Is it enough to bring them back? Is it enough to deal with the regulatory overload? Is it enough? What's even the process to get a drug manufacturing facility started here? How many permits? What do you need? All that. I don't even know the mechanism. I don't know if 25% is enough. 20% is enough. Maybe if it's insurance, it just goes up 25%. Nobody gives a crap until you get your insurance bill, which is another problem, right? I mean, this is all, I guess what I'm saying is it's also complicated. And you and I probably, if we went through it, would find a better way to do this. Maybe it would be to get rid of drug patents, although I'm sure there's a patent on penicillin's long sailed, if there ever was one. I mean, you're right. All this stuff has to change, but right now all I see is a sledgehammer approach of higher taxes and virtually everybody. And I pity the fool who all of a sudden has to come back to work. I think he should be back at work, he or she. And you and I have had that discussion. But all of a sudden, well, man, if I'm coming back to work, I need a car. Well, okay. I mean, I was just thinking today, everybody knows I'm a pickup kind of guy, I'm a truck kind of guy. I was just thinking, Kevin, the one I bought in 1999, which is fairly similar to the one I have now, was a real nice GMC extended cab pickup. You know, it wasn't leather, but it had everything on it, but all the leather. It was a really nice truck. I think I paid $29. List price was $29. I leased it, I think. But so say $30. I'm thinking next week or next month, those things are up to about $75. Now, you're probably not going to add $25 to it, but you might add $20. So now we're talking 90, right? So that's 1999. So it's up. It's three times as expensive, which means I pay three times as much tax, which makes it even more expensive, right? So instead of paying what I paid last time, $1,800 in tax, now I'm paying close to $6,000. So that's another $4,000 on top of the damn thing. My insurance can be way more because it's cost more to fix now. Now, okay, if I look at my CPI, I would bet, I'll look and see here. What do you think the CPI says the rise in sales in prices have been since 2000? Let me look. Would your guess be? I'm going to say they're going to say it's almost twice. What are you thinking?
You think they're saying it's 100%?
I think. Oh no, I think it's more than that. I bet they say. Let's find out here. I'm going to say they think it's 150%. maybe 180, and it's actually 3. Well, that's a problem. That's exactly what you outlined early in the show, right?
Yes. We're getting lies. So, in a way, it's why I'm, I don't have confidence or lack of confidence that this is going to make any progress. I'm sort of neutral on that because I don't know. But when you talk about a sledgehammer approach, I don't know what else we should be doing that's not a sledgehammer approach, because we're at crisis level already. And, you know, that's where I think the problem is.
By the way, you were spot on, bud.
We're trying to whistle past that graveyard, I'm sorry. I think this is all ready to fall apart anyway. So, you know, what are we going to do? Screw things up?
I would say if you took a vote from this show, with all the arguing back and forth we do, if you took a vote from this show, you looked at Carl's calculations, you look at your ability to figure out what we can do faster, which you're probably the best at here, and look at Russell, what's going on overseas. I'm going to say we should start day one. If it was us in the Oval Office, the biggest single problem is in medicine, not in shovels coming from China. That's where we would start, because that's the single biggest spot where the hole is, with the pharmaceuticals in the hospital.
Yeah, and you know what? And as someone who teaches, you know, how you go about attacking quality problems, I'm clearly a big believer in using Pareto analysis to do the attack and pick out the number one issue and all of that. But I also just had a classroom conversation with a student who said, you know, she's in charge of an acquired company. They have to do a lot of culture change just to get people on board, to stop doing things the way they always have, and to start, you know, embracing quality management the way it's supposed to work and all of that. And my advice to her was, where can you get a win? Where can you get a win now? So if you go back and look at, you know, like what I said about HHS, I think we got some immediate inroads. You know, you have all kinds of fast food chains that are switching away from seed oils for making their fries. You're getting individual states are applying for snack exceptions so that they can stop poisoning poor kids in the SNAP programs. So you're starting to see some ways to win before you go take on the pharmaceutical industry, which is where you really, you know, one of the places you have to go right away to make some inroads there. So I think there is some value to saying, where can I win now? I don't know what's going to work and what's not. I'm not, you know, sitting here saying, you know, hey, this is all going to be great. I don't know. But what I am certain, I am very certain, that we're completely boinked if we continue the way we go.
Well, raising taxes on people who don't have any money, I'd be very reluctant to do that. But hey, by the way, we both were pretty close. January 2000 to February 2025 is $1.89. $1, so it's up not even double. And yet, you name me anything that has any sort of value, be it education, be it vehicles, be it houses, that hasn't doubled since 2000. And yet the CPI is still percolating along here. But now, get back, I don't want to beat this one up too much, maybe I already have. What if the penicillin guy says 20% isn't enough? If you idiots show up with one inspection, it costs me more than 20%, screw you. I'm thinking in some areas, Kevin, 20 or 25% is egregious, and it's nothing more than a tax on you and me. Some areas, it's probably not enough to change the behavior.
I guess we'll find out.
Well, maybe, but the only problem with that is we will find out, but you and I are money out of pocket in the meantime.
Well, yeah, I know we are. So it damn well better work, or I'll be really, really pissed.
Well, I don't know. Well, every politician is going to declare victory, right? I mean, I just don't know that raising. You look at the tax. I mean, I'll dig it up here. These are changes, Kevin, and I agree with you that, you know, something needs to happen. That doesn't mean, you know, I get to go out and rape your wife. That's something too, but it's not. But I'm looking at the debt.
I'm getting that analogy very, very well.
I'm saying something. You can't broaden the term "something" meaning to anything. You know what I'm saying is what I'm trying to get to. But now this national debt clock here. I put this thing up here, and you know, and all these. In this is the this is the change our guys are pushing at us. Okay. Right now, if I would have looked at this a month ago, total federal tax revenue is $5.1 trillion. Income tax, $2.3, payroll, $1.7, excise taxes, $105, but it's like on booze and stuff, right? Estates and gift taxes, $31 billion. All right, corporate tax revenue, $530 billion, so a small piece of all of it. Which is now about to get, by the way, a hell of a lot smaller. The tariff revenue was $67 billion, so basically double the estate stuff. Now, if you look across the board here, now you've got total state tax revenue and total local tax revenue. So state is 2.6 and local is 2.0. So the state and local is damn near as much as the federal, okay? You know, it's 15% lower. Now you look at this and you say, all right, how much of this is regressive versus, you know, progressive? Income tax, I guess you could say it's progressive. I'm saying some people don't think there should be, but that's another story. Payroll, totally regressive, right? Excise taxes on booze and stuff, that's totally regressive. Most of your state tax revenue is sales tax and maybe property tax. I'm going to put that in the local, in the regressive column. Local tax revenue is $2 trillion. I'm going to put most of that in the regressive column. Corporate, I don't know where you put that. Tariff revenue used to be $67 billion. Estimate for next year, $658 billion. Kevin, so we're talking about kind of a number here. And I'm going to put that totally in the regressive column, except maybe because the price of Mercedes is going to go up more than the price of Chevy, so maybe that's a little progressive. This is an incredible shift, and our president says he's going to use this money to lower income taxes. Which, okay, the one piece left on the screen here that is progressive is the income taxes. So we're substituting a tremendous regressive tax for a progressive tax. I'm not saying that some of that shouldn't happen, blah, blah, blah. I'm just saying, is anybody looking to this other than me and realizing that's just what happened? It's very similar to the Ronald Reagan situation where we lowered the income taxes and we increased the payroll taxes. Yep. To get back to the same number.
Let's step away from rates for a minute, because, you know, that's really the big bone of contention on this. And just talk about, if you were to look forward and say, what would a better federal budget look like? What would be the things that would be contributing to it?
I think a lot of their problem is on the expense side, as we both would agree.
Yeah. So
but I think you have some.
You would take a big gouge out of CMS, right?
Well, you except most of the money that's real money is going to people. It's not people in Washington.
I understand that. But a lot of that's payroll people too.
Okay,
you
asked me the question. What I'm trying to say, there are some serious issues, maybe not so much for the last couple of days, that are give-ups in the tax structure. I don't see how you don't have some capital gains treatment, or whether it should be the whole number, and if somebody buys a stock at a buck, and they croak and it's 200. And the next day their kid sells it, say there should be no tax there. You know, is that going to solve the budget deficit? No. But, I mean, that's a gouge out of the system that I think needs to be erased. Now, do I think if you've owned the stock that long or a house that long, that your capital gains rate should be 20%? No, I'd go with, I would, you know that I'm a very strong proponent of the capital gains rate should be indexed. If you buy something a year and one day ago and you made money on it, I'm not so sure the capital gains rate should be any lower than the regular rate. But if it's 50 years ago with the inflation we've had, come on, really? Should it be this? It probably should be 10%, right, or 8%. So that's a problem. The carried interest thing, that's a problem. I mean, there's probably three or four massive gouge outs in the income tax law that I would write tomorrow. The idea that the companies are still holding money, are making money here and paying taxes offshore. I'd stop that for sure. Trump allegedly stopped that last time. At the end of the day, it was more advantageous to have your company overseas than it was when he started. So those are three areas I'd start. Now, you're going to say to me, that's not going to come close to matching the budget. And oh, by the way, you'd be correct. But it's something. Right. It's,
well, you know, much like I said, forget about the taxation rates, because those are an item for debate. I'd also say, don't worry as much about the lineups, but more, you start with the broad categories. So what would it look like? Well, we could probably carve. Geez, I got to believe, forgetting the healthcare stuff, we can probably carve a good $1 trillion out of the federal budget, because we put it in the last 10 years.
We could pull out the Simpson Bowles and actually read the damn thing. Yeah, we could do that.
Yeah, but I, you know, actually, I think it's too late for Simpson Bowles. That, you know, philosophically, it's good, but we ignored that, you know, what, 15 years ago?
Hey, you know, a quick everyone, so, sorry to interrupt.
Let me finish this up. So we set that aside. Now, you know, the whole analysis is skewed in a lot of different directions. But if you're talking about, you know, in broad brush, what are the things you want? You want to be spending less on healthcare. You want to be spending less on stupid stuff. And when I say stupid stuff, I think it's a lot of these, what I would call agenda items, that are not really economic. They're more philosophical, and we have ingrained those in. Plus, it's all the stuff that gets into the non-government organizations that then have ties back to all the politicians. And so there's a whole lot of graft on that. That's where I think $1 trillion
is.
I think there's a lot of other money in healthcare, but I also think then where else do you have to go? Well, you'd love to have a million more people employed in jobs that pay well, not fast food, not necessarily even retail, but in jobs that pay well, which means manufacturing jobs. And so that gives you an income tax base that even at lower rates would be producing more. And also, if those companies are operating in the United States, they're probably paying more taxes in the United States as well. So you deal with it on that side. And then if you have a million more people employed in jobs that pay well, then you also have a lot more economic activity in general.
Well, private industry is clearly there.
And so if I were to say, I'm looking into my crystal ball, and I don't care what you do about it, that if you look into your crystal ball and say, what does an economy need to look like at some future point that is going to be thriving, that is going to be not the screwed up situation we're in today, you've got to start getting descriptive like that to start, so that you can start moving in that direction. Now you're ready for tactics.
Well, how about, all right, first of all, I'm not, close your ears. I agree with Kevin. You can open them back up.
Now I can tell. Now I know we're going to magically lose this, and it's not going to make it to the archive.
It's not going to make it to the archive. I agree with all that, but I think, Kevin, some of our stuff is big, and I would be much more of a rifle approach. You're never going to get me to not agree to, if I'm sitting in the Oval Office, if you walk in and say, hey, we got this money going to these idiots out on the border, wherever the hell they are. By the way, they're tied back into Ricky's family in the Senate, and they're not doing anything. You think I'm going to say don't cut it? I'm never. You know I'm not going to do that. But now here's.
Yeah, I know. That's why I keep saying Congress ain't going to do this.
But here's my. I think, Kevin, if you go after the big dough, how about this? How about this being revolutionary? I think part of the problem with the drugs, and again, I'm zeroed in on this because I had this conversation with a buddy of mine. When you zero in on the drugs, I think the biggest abusers of not paying taxes here are the people who sell the drugs here. And I would do something like, if you have a U.S. drug patent, you better be friggin' here. You're paying. You're not telling me your income is in Ireland if you're selling Xarelto here for, you know, $500 a month when you're squashing $18 to make and you're not paying taxes here. At least you're kicking back to 35%, buddy. I don't even think we're even making sure that happens.
Well, it'll probably show up in the tariffs now.
No, it won't. The price will be higher for the poor guy buying it.
All right. So I get that. And this is why I say it's real easy. I mean, this is the urge we get, is to go right to some line item and get into it. And sooner or later, you have to get there. But if we're going to spend all our time wallowing in those, then we're never going to get. Never going to have this ultimate vision of where we're going and what it's supposed
Kevin,
to be.
But you are absolutely correct when you say we need some kind of a vision. But I think our vision, even though we would fight about it the whole way, would be more of a rifle shot approach. It would be, wait a minute, we're giving all this money to Northwestern University. They're not even paying the water bill for Chicago? I mean, what are we doing here?
I think once you decide how you want to operate, then you start attacking those one at a time, and it takes a long time and a lot of patience and the will to do it.
Well, we need right now, because it's so egregious, even if we don't disagree on timing, we need to stop this medical crap right now. That's the huge hole in the budget. Whether Vietnam screws us on this product versus another, I guess it's a problem. But it's not the same as us paying out of people's pockets this kind of dough and maybe not even get our share back in the income tax. What did Carl say? We're only getting 4% of the 40% of the revenue that they're paying out in Medicare and Medicaid. Now these guys' approach seems to be, and you're going to argue with me, maybe not this harsh, screw them, cut back the Medicaid and the other stuff, and if they die, they die. I mean, I don't think that's the approach, but
don't think that's the approach either.
But it comes out that way almost, because if there's not Medicaid, what is there? I mean, type of a thing. But let's leave that for another day. But I'm saying, somewhere, who's making all the money here? And if it's the drug companies, let's at least make sure they're paying their taxes back. Can we at least do that, for God's sake, to humor me? I mean, right? I mean, I don't think it's Social Security. I think we could make, again, I'm not the expert, Carl would probably say, and he'll be on, we'll talk about this labor. Does anyone even know there's a labor report today? I think we could probably up, of course, people aren't living as long, so I don't want to do this, but we probably could up the retirement age a year across the board and increase the Social Security contribution by 5%. And I think we're pretty close, Kevin. I mean, Carl knows more about that. That's pretty close, okay? It's not so bad. The one that's the hole is the other stuff, right? It's the medical and the drugs. And so I think we need to go there first.
Part of the medical is the health of the population. The number, the amount of overweight people we have, the amount of, incidence of diabetes, there's all kinds of things.
But those people just die, Kevin. They just die.
And those can be addressed in part because when you talk about the pharmacy companies, part of their gig is if people are unhealthy, we can prescribe them drugs. Oh, goody. The catch there is that, if people are healthier, then we don't have to prescribe them drugs. We can start getting a little bit of traction there. Again, I don't think that's enough to solve the problem. I am more interested in solutions like what you tossed out, is we're just going to chop out your patent protection and severely curtail that. There's a lot of places I would go with that. But right now, I'm not really talking as much about the line items as I am about saying, okay, how do we, what do we need to be? I don't think there's any discussion of that, which is disheartening. I'm not saying, you know, Trump actually is talking a little bit about, you know, what the long term looks like, and, you know, that this is short term gain, et cetera. So he's, you know, he is at least having that conversation, although I can't say that he's out there. You know, something Reagan was really good at was talking about, Reagan was really good at talking about his end game and what that was going to look like. And part of the reason he was really good at it is he was an actor, and actors happen to be, to really understand what vision is all about, because, you know, what does a director do when it comes, when it's time to shoot a scene? Well, the director is not just saying, here's your mark, here's your lines. A director is looking and saying, okay, here is the mood I want to create, here is the feeling I want to create, here is the whole sense that the audience should get about this scene. And Reagan really got that, and he talked about it a lot, and so he was really good at communicating that to people. Again, for better, for worse, you don't like the vision, that's fine, but you know, Trump isn't that, he's not that articulate at it. So
well, Kevin, what you just said though about the, we're trying to, you know, and we have people on the show who say, okay, we got a problem, people are too fat, they've got diabetes, it's a problem, it's like their problem. You know what, Kevin? Insulin, what I understand, I know a lot of people that, unfortunately, a lot of people in training floor, they're diabetic, and we have been since kids. If insulin is $8 a day like it's supposed to be, I still would like the person to do the best they can health-wise on their own, but that's nothing to the budget. Now, if it's $100 a day because somebody somehow corralled the market, now we got a problem.
On the other hand, if we're not selling Cheetos to...
okay, but I'm not, saying, you know, one does not obviate...
not feeding a steady diet of crap to poor people where there's a huge incidence of obesity and diabetes, then maybe...
I'm with you, but let's not...
And so I'm glad we're putting that pressure on that.
Even skinny people die, and even skinny people have problems. But what I'm saying, Kevin, is that we know
okay,
that...
I agree. Who's more likely to have problems?
Okay, but,
who's more likely to be...
All right, so let's say maybe people we know from the show, past or present or future, might have smoked in their day. Well, okay, you shouldn't have smoked. Now they have a lung problem, and they're getting treatments for that. The treatment is $50,000. Well, okay, now that's a problem. You shouldn't have smoked in your day if you did. You know, you shouldn't have worked on asbestos when you were a kid. You didn't know it then. Now this treatment's $50,000. What if the treatment costs $1,000? If it was $1,000, Kevin, I'm not so sure on a federal budget level it's a problem. We're just treating somebody. Now if it's 50, now we got an issue. Where's the 50 going? Who gets the damn 50? Are they at least here paying it income tax on a half of it or a third of it? Or already in Zimbabwe? I mean, that number creates the problem. You're right. The problem is somebody smoked when they should.
No, that number in part is a response to the problem. In part, it is a cause of the problem. But the ultimate, there's no problem. They ain't charging $50,000 for a treatment if more people are healthy in the first place.
Well, I get it, but it's not that people get sick. The older, plus if we keep living older, nobody had to worry about prostate cancer. Everybody died when they were 40, right?
Say that again?
I said nobody had to worry about prostate cancer when everybody croaked when they were 40.
Yeah, I guess, and I guess we're better at diagnosing things that we would have written off. Yeah, I'm not saying it's as simple as I'm laying it out to be, but that's a big dimension of it too, is making sure that we, you know, why would we do that? Why do we sell products in this country using ingredients that are banned through most of the world?
We have, well, I don't want to sound like Greg Pappas and say it's always been like, you're old enough, I know you're a young man, Kevin. You're old enough to remember the bleep holes from the tobacco companies what, 15 years ago, going in front of Congress and say we're not sure that tobacco, that smoking causes any problems?
Yeah.
None of those guys ever went to jail. How much money did they make?
Oh, I'm 100% behind putting people in jail.
But I'm saying that was probably the most egregious, and we talk about a legal system. You know, I used to think of it as, Kevin, when I was starting to manage money from people even then when I was on the floor, and I always got the question about how, why isn't any of my money into, rentals and those places? I said, I can't in any kind of conscience, even though I'm very much against smoking, put your money in a place where there's, 1,000 lawsuits around the world. What if they lose one? I got all these other companies that I can put your money
in. They have, and they've settled out of a bunch of them.
Well,
when it's just when we're talking about a fine and we're talking about judgments, that's cost of doing business.
You know how many years? No, you know what, Kevin?
And so you are absolutely right. Until we start putting people in handcuffs and marching them out for all to see and throwing them in jail after a conviction, then we'll make some real inroads.
You know why there was never a conviction? I'm starting in the 50s and 60s and 70s when people first started seeing how they used to give the stuff free through the government to soldiers, right? That's how my dad and my mom got started. They gave it free in the Army. But anyway, they outweighed the person with the lung cancer, so they never had a trial because the person had already died. And then it got dismissed. There's a legal system that works pretty well, huh?
It's running out the clock, yep.
Hey, we got to get Carl on here because we got to get our door prepped for the.
Oh shit! How did it get to be?
We're talking. Carl's got to be the only guy in the world that even knows there's a labor report today. Who cares?
Oh come on! No, I. Chief. Boy, I'll tell you, it's tough not to hit the unmute button when you were talking about the thing with Canada and the labor costs of Stellantis.
Carl, let me give you an invitation. Because I know you're on, and I know you listen for the first hour. You can hit the unmute button anytime you want. Jump in.
Well, so Chief, you're right in that a huge part of that assembly cost difference is the health stuff, right? Because when you look at the what I pay you as a salary is not your fully laden cost. You know this,
yes.
Right? I mean, most people don't understand it. But anyone that's actually ever written the checks understands it, all right? So, but here's the problem. Canada, has a subsidized, supposedly free healthcare system, right, for anybody that's Canadian. Okay, the problem with this is, how is it, and this was going on 20 years ago, how is it that Canada has $5 insulin and America has $100 insulin?
Well, okay? That's what we were talking about.
And by the way, there was a tremendous amount of traffic through the tunnel in Windsor. You can't take commercial trucks through there because it's a tunnel. And if something went wrong, oops, right? So all the commercial stuff, all the big trucks have to go over the Ambassador Bridge. But cars, you personally, can go through the tunnel. And sometimes that is much to your advantage if you're going over there, because if the traffic is all backed up with the trucks, you're going to sit.
When was that tunnel built?
A long time ago. But it's interesting because it comes out in the, in the middle of both downtown Detroit and downtown Windsor. All right, and
it's like that Lincoln Tunnel in New York.
Yeah, it's like right there. And one of the interesting things is just an aside. When I was a young man, this was before there was craft beer in the United States. Canadian beer was much better than American beer. And so,
I like Grizzly.
I like Molson Berdor and Extra Stock and Labatt's 50 and some of these others. And so, I could get in the car and go over there. I didn't live really all that close. So, if I made a beer run, I was going to, go buy, six cases or something like this, right? And so I go over there. the Canadian customs guy. This was way before 9/11, so all you had to do was flash a driver's license. You know, citizenship, American. Oh, what's your purpose in coming into Canada today? Going to Brewers Retail. Oh, okay, because everything's sold. It's all government store.
Well, isn't the duty free store in the tunnel, like in the tunnel?
Well, no, it isn't. But it's right at the entrance.
Okay.
But it doesn't work because you're not going to stay in Canada long enough. Okay. So basically, the way it works is that you go over there and but Brewers Retail is literally right around the corner from the tunnel exit. So you go in there, you get your beer, you get back in the car, you go back through the tunnel, pay the toll, you come over to the customs guy on the U.S. side. You have anything to declare? There's 6 cases of beer sitting in the back seat.
Right? Yeah.
Yes, 6 cases of beer. And you go in there, you pay, you know, you pay the duty. I think it was like $1 a case or something like that, or $1.20 a case. It wasn't much, but it was, you know, but it was something. And so, you know, you went in there and you gave the guy your $5 and, you know, you're on your way. But this was, the thing is that the reason that all these countries are able to have a socialist, if you want to call it that, healthcare system where it's built into the tax base and it doesn't destroy their budgets, okay, I mean, it doesn't just completely ruin them, is that all the pharmaceutical companies, all the medical companies, everybody involved in this scams the United States. We pay for all the drug development, all the testing, all that stuff, and all that cost gets forced on the 330 million Americans, and all the other nations turn around and say, oh, Pfizer, you want to sell that drug over here, Merck, or, you know, whoever it is. Guess what? We know that this costs you 50 cents a pill to make.
Well, why is that a shot against Canada, not a shot against our own head?
No, wait a minute. I'm not saying it's a shot against Canada. I'm saying, by the way, this is a felony. 15 U.S.C. Chapter 1 applies to international commerce. Okay? In fact, if you read the statute, it specifically states international. So, not just in the United States, monopolizing and fixing prices is against the law. If you do it with a nexus to America and it's an international firm, it's an international event, that is the same felony as if you did it right here. So as a result of our unwillingness to attack this problem in the U.S., and I don't care whether it's a Republican or a Democrat in office, neither of them has done a effing thing about this.
They've taken checks from them.
This is where Obamacare was a total scam, all right? And I raised a huge amount of hell about this when it was being debated. I was one of the few people.
But it was around before Obamacare.
It was, but this is, you know, Obama said he was going to solve these problems. He not only didn't solve it, he made it worse.
As he went through the protocol, because he was foolish enough to not get help from the other side and make this bipartisan and actually.
No, Chief. Neither.
But he also didn't look at the cost part. He just wanted to get it done, which was. Which is totally ignorant.
It was not ignorant. It was deliberate.
I don't know. I think it was lazy.
No, I think it was deliberate. The man is not stupid. And I'm sorry, I do not accept ignorance from somebody who claims to be the smartest man in the room, and he does.
They took the costs as they were, and they just maneuvered them around.
And guess what?
I recognize the theory of it.
The exponential, you're telling me the guy failed middle school arithmetic.
Okay, no, what I'm saying is...
Yes, you are.
Let me finish. The theory was the old system was falling apart. We're essentially...
It was destroyed.
Hospitals used to maneuver their own, whatever you want to use it, their own ways of manipulating insurance.
Right.
Okay, so they had...
Which is illegal.
Somebody who had a Cadillac insurance policy paid way more than the cost... And at the bottom of the chain, if somebody showed up in the emergency room and you had to take the gunshot out of them,
right.
the one paid for the other. But as time went by, the insurance companies are saying, we're not doing that anymore. We want a negotiated stuff for us. The hospitals did not have the largesse to essentially do what the government was supposed to do on their own. So the theory was, okay, if we can somehow have everybody with some base level insurance that nobody walks in the hospital and can't pay something, then we can sort of even this out. That was the theory of it. And there's probably nothing wrong with the theory. And from there, from day one, I said, wait a minute, if you don't address the cost stuff, you can't just be like the kid in the street shoving the marble with the three, you know, saucers. And that's what they ended up doing. Because the lobby to the Democrats is huge. The lobby to the Republicans, which tells them to not do anything, is huge. And at the end of the day, instead of having a good policy, we got one crummy policy where if the Republicans were in charge, we'd have no policy. So no matter which way you look at it, it's a goat bleep. I agree with you.
Chief, see, you okay. Which is the largest lobbying industry in D.C.?
It used to be the military. Then it was Fannie and Freddie. I think now it's the drug companies.
It is. If you go look at who leases all the space on K Street,
I'm talking about for a long time. It was Fannie and Freddie. It was the oil companies.
It was a gee. What did they produce? They produced the 08 blow-up.
Just saying. You asked me, and I'm answering the question. Now I think it's the drug companies, but I'm not sure.
The drug companies have been in the top three for the last 40 years.
Yeah, and for a while it was oil, then it was military, then it was Fannie and Freddie.
Here's the thing. You know, you made a statement earlier on during the show, not all of the Congress people are crooks. Yours never is. Everybody else's always is.
No, I also said yesterday that the problem you run into, actually 2 days ago, is if whatever you are, if you're on, and I use the example of the trading floor, if everybody allows, out of the 900 and some people that were traders, if everybody allows 90 people to be crooks, and the 90 people are found about and becomes a laughing stock, the other 810 might as well be crooks because you're tarred with the same brush, and because you can't police your industry, you probably deserve it. That's what I said about Congress, I'll stick by that.
And the thing is that we keep going down this road, okay? And yet, the answer to every problem is kick the can, print more credit, put more out there. It's never. And oh, by the way, if you think the 401k is a savior for the people that are in the middle class, all right. You know damn well, because you've been in the industry long enough, you saw what happened in 1987, okay? You saw what happened in the early part of 2000.
I make a correction there. I felt what happened in 1987.
Yeah, well, a lot of people felt what happened. I mean, I wasn't trading anything at the time because I was a poor SOB that was working for a paycheck. But I happened to be downtown in one of the pubs the Friday before.
Well, that's the thing. Everybody thinks it was Monday. It actually started Wednesday. We were already down.
It did. And that's the thing is half the people in that bar Friday night acted like they literally just had their throat slit.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because they couldn't do anything. Okay. They knew they were screwed if everything blew up on Monday, and as it turns out, it did. The other half were laughing their asses off, buying $50 shots.
Well, I don't think that many people were long puts, but...
Well, there weren't too many, but there were a few people that were short things going into the close, and they were a little scared that it might reverse on
Monday. All right, we got to shift gear here. We want to go to early break so we get back from this.
Yeah.
But I have a question for you, because I was digging through all the stuff about auto workers in Canada. The first thing that comes up, you're an AI kind of guy. I was going to be nice. I was going to ship this to you and say... hey, Carl, stick it up your behind. Look what AI says. But I'm not going to do that to you. Plus, I dug much deeper and found out that this AI is probably wrong. Canadian auto. Guess what this says? Canadian auto workers cost their employers approximately $27 per hour more than their American counterparts, with an all-in cost of around $79 per hour of Canadian workers versus $60 per hour for U.S. workers. And I'm like, that's $27 an hour difference. It costs more to set up shop and operate in Canada, which can impact the competitiveness of the Canadian industry. UAW's contracts in the U.S. automakers differ from those in Canada. Americans surrendered past gains where the Canadians didn't. Wages, consequently, across job classification, and American auto workers make lower wages than Canadians. Everywhere else you look, it says the Canadian guys make less.
Well, you know what? You can grab all the AI, you can grab all of the lobbyist stuff, but here's the reality. If Stellantis says that it's 40% more expensive to assemble a car in terms
don't believe Stellantis is, they're like politicians.
I get this, but here's the thing. Stellantis is moving the production. Now you don't do that. You bitch and you try to whine and get people to change things. But Stellantis isn't doing that. Stellantis is moving the actual assembly back into the United States. And what that says to me, look, I'm a bare knuckle business person. I may try to lobby and get somebody to do something politically if I can. But at the end of the day, if it's cheaper for me to put the thing together in Detroit than in Windsor, I'm going to put it together in Detroit.
I went through the math. And again, Carl, this is political CEO talking. I'm going to say if the other numbers I came up with, which means they actually make a little less up there, and it's 38% more to less to make a car, to assemble a car in Canada.
Assemble, it right. It takes,
now, if you use that term directly, it means assembling the car, and if you just look at the labor hours and the people looking to do it, it is, say there's 25, say 30 hours to assemble a car, because they're doing trucks up there, right?
Right.
30 hours.
That's all they make now, yeah.
All right, so 30 hours, and I've got them with the employment cost is about 30% less up there, which almost is exactly equal to the not having to pay health insurance. So we're talking about maybe $15 an hour, $20 an hour times 30. We're talking $600 to $1,000 cheaper in Canada to assemble the car. I don't know. I don't know enough to know, are the property taxes cheaper? Is it that much cheaper to build a plant up there? I doubt that. And now if you try and put a, if you're saving $1,200 and the tax is going to be, and the tax on a $80,000 pickup or a $100,000 Jeep is going to be $25,000. Yeah, I'm going to try and come back here. But
of course.
But does that mean that's all that, does it really matter? Is it all worth it? I don't know. I mean, maybe it means that because the Canadians are going to do the same thing, and the engines and transmissions are made here, and they're paying taxes on that going up and coming back, they could be talking, what, $40,000 in taxes on an $80,000 car?
Nobody
can absorb that.
Well, I understand that. But here's.
Hey, we got to go to break. We got to talk about our stuff.
Yeah, I got you. We got the numbers.
Ricky, coming. let's go to break, and when we come back, we should front run these numbers. Not front run. We should have them when they come out.
Yeah, we should front run.
That's front run them. Yes.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of HomeSource Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Lord, welcome back, Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. Ricky on the board. SP Futures down 146. NASDAQ Futures down 538. We actually come back here a little bit. We were down over 3% in both of those. We're just going to be real quick here because all these numbers are going to change in a second because of the... Just a real quick over in Asia. The Nikkei down 9.55, almost 3%. Hang Seng down 3.52, 1.5%. Shanghai down 8. Call that. Actually, they haven't traded since the 3rd, so I don't know what their story is with that. So they didn't trade today for some reason. Europe, DAX down 9.44. That's over 4%. FTSE down 3.32, 4%. CAC around down 3.07, 4%. You getting a number here? Banks are down 9% in Europe as China imposes regulatory tariffs. What do we have here in the XLF? I've got it down 3.5%, which is the banking index here. That's not good. Do we have a number here yet, Carol? Not really, huh? We're a minute ahead?
We got 30 seconds.
We got 30 seconds? All right, well.
30 seconds.
By the way, what's this number supposed to be?
Well, ADP said plus 150, which is, pull the other one. These guys are never right. So,
or they are right. And
or they are right and the government's lying, right?
Yeah.
One of the two. But this also should have some of the doji federal government cuts.
What's the week? Is it the third week of the month, the data?
Yeah, it's the samples there. Okay, non-farm payroll up 228. Unemployment at 4.2, which they say little change, but that's up a tick, I believe.
Yes.
Yep, that's up one tick. Says job gains occurred in healthcare, social services, transportation, warehousing. Healthcare, big shock, right? Where's our biggest problem with regards to, the economy? It's there. And yet, has there been any movement to do anything about that? Absolutely not.
Has there been any increase in care? I'm going to say
now,
no.
Now, wait. Well, of course not. Federal government employment declined. By the way, I have someone on my forum that's got an issue with a lump somewhere where it shouldn't be. And, 2 months to get an appointment to see somebody at a place that actually knows what the hell they're doing. So,
that's cool.
That'd be great. Let's go from having a little problem to, being dead. because we just sat on
Carol, let's start on, I know I'm on the dummy page.
Let me plug these numbers in. You go ahead and talk.
Well, I'm still on the dummy page here, and obviously the we're still kind of, I'll say they use the term, reeling from January. When I say this, the amount of people in the population, the amount of people in the labor force in January went up 2.2 million people, which does start every January, and Carl works our way through this. Well, now
January is always a garbage month for that reason.
So right? We actually have less people working this month than we showed in January, according to this thing, the household survey. We were 163.9, then we were 163.3 in February. Now we're back up 200,000 in March. So the increase in the household survey sort of equals the other one, the establishment survey. But I've got 30,000 people more unemployed, and I've got 50,000 people less. We don't know what they're doing. So
all right, this is actually so on a non-adjusted basis. Okay, and this is actually a decent month to use that. On a non-adjusted basis, the household survey is plus 868. That's a big number.
Which one?
Household survey.
You're coming in kind of light. Is that on our end or your end?
It's got to be on your end. I don't.
There we go.
Yeah, nothing's changed here. The on the household survey, unadjusted, it's plus 868 from last month.
800,000.
868,000 plus
868. Wow.
When I first looked, I said, "Oh, that can't be right." And then I look at the next column over there. Yeah, actually, it is right. I thought maybe I picked the number up wrong when I looked at the spreadsheet, but no, I did not pick the number up wrong. And by the way, unadjusted, the unemployment rate ticked down 3 ticks.
How many people you got in the nothing? Don't know what they're doing, column.
Don't know what we're doing. Was down. Let's see. This says 362, which that's about right.
This has it down like 50. But the number that you and I look at. Well, I won't say the most. There's still less than 60% of the people working.
59.9.
Yeah.
Now that's up 3 ticks though from last month.
See, this has equal to last month.
Yeah. Well, that's because it's adjusted. But here's the other interesting. So, you'd say this is a very strong number, right? I mean, just at first blush. All right. And by the way, the SPOOS went up. 30 handles when it was, when the number dropped too. The problem is that the population adjusted 12-month run rate, which is, I mean, you know, March comes the same month every year, right?
Yep.
So does Christmas. That, and this is not an adjustment month. So, I mean, like I said, you know, you always ignore January because of the screwball stuff. Is neg 3.083 million, which is a deceleration, a negative change from last month, which was neg 2.907. Now, that's not a big negative change, but
you're you're talking about the population over 16
plus. So what this is this
now adjusted? They've got us up 5 million from last year.
Okay.
How do you adjust the amount of people, for God's sake?
because we twist knobs for political reasons in the BLS, so I always use the unadjusted numbers. But from a standpoint of where the economy's going when it comes to employment, all right, the two figures that matter are the employment population ratio, which is the big one that I always harp on. That is the sustainability of the federal government's tax and spending system, because without people actually paying taxes, you got problems, all right? But the second one, in terms of individual good or bad, on a large scale basis, not I lost my job, that's a depression, you lost yours, it's a recession, right?
Yeah.
But on a population wide basis, it is the delta over 12 months compared with the change in population, because you have to adjust. If you just look at the change in employment over the last 12 months, you're ignoring the fact that the population's going up. Now, everyone says we're in the middle of a Democrat, and, you know, Musk was going on this rant. The last thing he said, you know, is, well, my real fear is that humans are going to go extinct because, you know, we're below replacement, blah, 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 blah. Okay, look, you can look at CDC Wonder, and you can look at their birth rate statistics all you want. What I'm looking at is the non-institutional 16-plus population, and taking the employment, the number of people who are employed, and adjusting for that delta, because from a standpoint of the person on the street who wants a job and needs to have some remunerative way to make a living, that's the figure that matters. And at a macro level, that's the figure that 6 to 12 months out tells us where the economy's going.
All right.
Doesn't tell you where it's going tomorrow.
Let me go through a couple of numbers from this, and I know they're not as good. Just say it another way. If you go back to 2007... Well, 2000. No, of course, in 2009, it's all kind of crumbled. But
yeah, but I can look at 07. Let's
look at 07. I've got out of all the we've got 231 million people that are above the age 16. All right, 146 million are employed, 7 million are unemployed, looking for a job, and there's 78 that are, we don't know what they're doing. So there's 146 million employed, and there's 85 either looking for a job, retired, in school, whatever. So the ratios, just think of the numbers, 146 to 85, which comes out to be 63%, okay?
Yeah, about 63, right.
No, but now if you look this month, we have 163 people, 3 million people that are employed, which is up like 17. But we've got 109 million either unemployed looking or we don't know what they're doing. So look at the difference in the numbers. It's now 59.9%. That's essentially how many million people that should be helping pay are somehow are on the other side. Now maybe they're
right, Chief. But now here's you know that number I just gave you, right, which is the population adjusted change. Right. If you go back and you look at the data tables all the way back to 2000 forward, right? In the beginning of 2007, January of 07, that figure went from fairly balanced over the previous several years. In other words, you know, one month there'd be a little positive, next month it'd be a little negative, but it was in balance. Went to a persistent and worsening negative figure. Now, we didn't have a crash for another, you know, year and change, right?
Well, we were bumping right around the 63 number for a real long time until 2010, and then we just
Chief, I understand that, but I'm saying from a standpoint of the dislocation that came in the economy in 2008, all right, the employment, this population-adjusted employment number had a downward slope that continued to worsen for a year and a half before the market blew up.
Okay, I'm just looking at the end of the year figures, so you got some more detail.
Well, I've got the data table going all the way back.
Right, so you got month, you got month to month. Okay,
I got month, but this is the 12-month run rate. Okay, now here's the other interesting thing, is that the crash that occurred in 2000 had that precursor show up in there too, and the so-called recovery that we had didn't really show in those figures until about 2004, 2005.
See, if you look at the yearly figures, you miss all that.
Well,
you see 98, 64.1, 99, 64.3.
I get that. I'm just saying that on a population-adjusted basis, okay, this has been a very, at least in the modern era. Now, I don't know, I don't have data going back in the 1950s and 1960s, but in the modern era, this has been a extremely reliable. When this thing turns and goes out of balance and stays that way for a year or so, it is a huge warning sign. And we've now got a year worth of it at this point under our belt. And this is saying there is a big, big problem and a dislocation within the labor market that is in the process of accelerating. This is a core breach, if you want to use Star Trek terminology.
Just to use everybody, in 2000, we had 64.4 was the participation rate. So it's almost 5% higher. How many people is that that would be working versus not working?
I mean, every tick on that number is like 500,000 employed.
When do you think we blow ballast? I can't believe it gets to 57 without having real problems.
Chief, we're so far underwater right now that you're trying to suck your breath into a straw. Here's the other interesting thing: the not seasonally adjusted numbers on employment population ratio, on education. Okay, they indicate that the non-high school educated, less than a diploma, or graduates both gained in the last month, and those people with some college associates and bachelors both lost.
That's unusual, right?
That is extremely unusual, and yet that's what the data says. Now, you could say, well, that's cooked. Well, maybe it is, but I mean, this is off the household survey, so... Now that is from my perspective, that is a rather, these are kind of interesting, they're interesting figures from that standpoint. While we're talking, I'm here looking at the, some of these other indicators. Hours worked did not change. Goods producing is up 3 ticks. That's pretty significant. Service providing unch. But goods producing was up 3, and most of this change appears to be in manufacturing a little, and construction. Now, that's not unusual because, spring, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you build things that construction kind of goes to sleep in the wintertime. But so I see it there. I don't see a whole lot in trade, transportation, things like that. A little bit in utilities, a little bit in information, both positive. Average weekly earnings and hourly paychecks. Now, this is the other one that I always think is interesting, is that you have a significant gain in leisure and hospitality in weekly earnings. You have some gain in paychecks in hourly, hourly rates. And I don't see anything here that slaps me upside the head as, oh crap, people are getting hours cut. So this is, because that's one of the early warnings, right? You'd rather cut people's hours than fire if you can.
Yeah, well, especially if there's any kind of a benefit associated with it.
Well, the thing is that, it's easier to cut someone's hours back because you don't lose the institutional knowledge they have.
A specific question that I think we probably went over, but I don't remember the answer.
By the way, private education and health services, hourly checks down a little bit. That is the one place that I see it. And also, hourly earnings down 7 cents. It's the outlier.
Okay. All right, so we went from the end of really maybe 2022, but certainly 2023 on the household survey to December of last year. So the 2 year mark.
Right.
You know, the establishment survey has up roughly 200,000 a month. So that's, well, it's, but 200,000 a month, it's 2.4 million. 2 years in a row is 4.8, right? But the household survey was only up 500,000 at time frame. And then we got this 2.2 million people bump in January in the household survey. And not only did we find them in the population, they're all working. How the hell did that happen? Because if you looked at through November, you'd say every job created had to be a second job for somebody. Because how could the household survey be stagnant?
How do those numbers add, right?
Yeah. And now all of a sudden in January, we find not only, well, we found 3 million people, of which 2.2 are working and 900,000 are in the, we don't know what they're doing column. I mean, somehow we unearthed 3 million people. Now, if it wasn't for that adjustment, you would think the household and the establishment are totally going different directions. And now all of a sudden, they almost match up. Where did that come from?
Okay, so the non-institutional population number comes off the ACS. Okay, so that's that long-form survey that you might have at some point gotten.
I did that about 3-4 years ago. I only did once my whole life, but that was
I've gotten one in my life as well, and the level of detail and intrusiveness that's in there is something else. But that's where that data comes from. The problem is that the BLS does not adjust that monthly. They do not make they take the data from the last year's ACS collection and they extrapolate it out 12 months, and that's what they use for the non-institutional population across the year, which is BS, because we have, that survey is not sent out only once. It goes out to people throughout the year, right? So, they get sample data all the time. But this is what the BLS does.
Going back to my statistics background, which is not much, but if they don't get it back from somebody, what do they think the difference is between the person that fills it out and versus the person who doesn't?
I don't know, but they get extremely aggressive if you don't return it.
Yeah, I remember that. I did get a couple of letters, and finally I did.
Yeah, they get really, really aggressive.
Do they ever come to your house?
They will, and they threaten, by the way, to, we'll jail you for that. Well, okay, yeah, good luck with that. I don't think you'd actually manage to convict somebody of refusing to answer. But, they get extraordinarily aggressive if you do not send it back. It starts with letters, and then it...
the thing's got to be 50 pages.
Oh, it's enormous, and it's we're not talking about
your regular census form. It's something real. How many bathrooms? How many bedrooms? I mean, we're talking serious stuff.
Oh, and exactly how much does everybody make? What do they do? It gets very, and it is extremely intrusive in terms of the level of detail. Now, supposedly, this is all de-identified. Yeah, right. Okay, pull the other one. But that's where that non-institutional population number comes from. The thing is BLS only rebases it in January, once a year. Everything else comes off the household survey every month. That figure gets rebased only once a year and in January. And so, as a result, that extrapolation is always wrong, okay, because that's all it is.
Well, 2-3 million people is kind of a lot to lose.
Well, it is, and the thing is, Chief, is that what it does is it makes the tables that I run personally, the January numbers are always a goat rodeo, okay, always, because off of those non-adjusted figures, January is going to be dislocation month. So I always warn people when I write an article on it or whatever. I'm like, look, if it's January, this is not yeah, this maybe looks like this, but wait and see whether or not this is actually a trend that, you know, that continues on through next month. If it does, then you pay attention to it in February. But for January, you know, I'm going to throw shade on it. And it's in every, you know, it's all the kinds of things. Here's, you know, Chief, think about this. 54,000 jobs, supposedly by the establishment survey, in healthcare in March, which is, you know, plus 2K over the prior 12-month average of 52. Think about this. Nursing and residential care facilities, hospitals, 17,000 each. Okay? How many of those do you think were doctors or nurses?
I think there's a lot of home care nurses and things. You know, the amount of care. When I say I don't ask everybody all this stuff, but how many people do you know? What percentage of your friends actually have a doctor?
Oh, like none.
Yeah,
including myself, by the way.
Well, I do, but
well, I don't, and
I'm saying I do because I see how these other people go in a hospital without a quarterback, and there isn't anybody to. To sign the release form, for God's sake.
Well, I know, you know, if I get run over by a truck, I'll worry about that. But
well, you know, yeah. I got one for you. My somebody close to me has a family member that's not doing so hot, and hopefully they'll, you know, they'll get a nice cure and whatever, nice person. But she's probably going to do a home hospice, right? Assuming things don't go better.
Things don't go well, right.
And, you know that if you don't have a doctor to put you in the hospice at home and you die, you cannot have, you know, the undertaker, the bereavement counselor, come over and pick up the body.
Yeah, that's not a surprise.
It has to go to the coroner and sit on a slab until they let it go. But yeah. If a doctor puts you in a hospice and you die, it's okay. You can go right to the undertaker. I had no idea that was the case.
You know, so to put a fine point on the insanity that I was just talking about with this healthcare number, last month we added a certain number of non-institutionalized people, right?
Yeah.
All right, 272847 to 273023. Okay, so that's, you know, a couple hundred grand, right? Okay. For each 3.26 people, someone got added to employment in healthcare.
And yet nobody has a place to go.
Do you believe this is why I say this entire system is nothing other than an extraction and extortion racket from top to bottom. Yes, in the middle of it, there are a few doctors and some nurses, okay? In the middle of it somewhere. Yeah, there are some. However, 90%. You're telling me that we need more than one doctor or nurse for every, say, 30 people?
Well, you're not getting a doctor.
Well, but I'm saying, yeah. but you know, what do you realistically need in society? Not everyone, no one needs a doctor every day, all day, right?
Again, what I'm seeing, and I, you know, thankfully I haven't been sick for a while. What I'm seeing is when I visited people in the hospitals, I see them incredibly overstaffed for the amount of patients that are there. The bills are huge.
Right.
But everybody goes to these urgent care facilities where people there every time somebody tells me their experience there is actually pretty darn good. People are there, they've been up for the test and always very pleasant and usually not that big of a wait. Then there's the emergency room nightmare that's a nightmare everywhere. You're talking 8 hours before anybody even comes near you in some places. It is an absolute joke up and down the line. I mean, how many people do you know? I see more people now that have an issue. I mean, I get good at looking at people and saying that person doesn't look so healthy. And, you know, as you get older and you see people stick around you your whole life, Kyle, you get a feel for it, unfortunately, right?
Right.
And I said, well, you guys are seeing anybody? Well, no, why? I've never seen so many people without any sort of care that obviously need something.
Maybe they obviously need it, right.
Well, I mean,
right.
maybe it's just a blood test. Maybe it's something. Find out, you know, what you're doing.
It's something.
Something, yeah. And I don't see it at all. I mean, the idea that there's care. I mean, at least people in the factory, there used to be a nurse in the factory if you weren't seeing good, feeling good. I mean, there's none of that anymore even. I wonder, I wouldn't care about spending a lot of money if everybody was like healthy. But in some of these worse neighborhoods where there's been drugs involved, oh God, yeah. Carol, hopefully you never have to wander through that. These people are 35, 40 years old. They look like they're 90. I don't know what you do about that.
Oh, I know. I have some experience with that within my own family, and it's very sadly also within people that used to be in my age cohort that I grew up with that aren't around anymore. And, I'll tell you, the abuse on this on all sides, right? I mean, I had someone that I knew that was a plumber. He got hurt on the job. Okay, screwed his back up really bad. They supposedly, quote unquote, were going to fix it with an operation. Well, they cut him up and made it 100 times worse.
Oh, yeah.
So now he's in, 9 out of 10 pain 24/7, right? Well, guess what? The only way you're going to deal with that is.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So. Well, and the problem, though, is that then the doc turns around and says, I can't give you any more because the DEA will come in and yank my license. All right? So what's he end up doing? Using street drugs.
And well, he could go to an NFL team and get it from them. They got a lot.
Well, and he ultimately killed himself by accident. All right? He OD'd and died.
Well,
this whole thing is a goat rodeo from the top to the bottom. And it's where this is the one that now, I know you don't like the tariff thing. I know, a lot of people don't. There's, the market obviously doesn't like it a bit. But here's the thing. Is this the prelude to Trump? Because he doesn't seem to care. Unlike his first term, where the stock market was a referendum on his presidency, right? That was his way of looking at it.
Yeah.
and he publicly said that. So, I'm not making it up. He actually said he saw that. Doesn't seem to care this time around. Is this the prelude to him yanking the rug out? Because now he's got his CMS guy in. Dr. Oz was just confirmed yesterday. All right? That was the last...
Another lapdog from media that all of a sudden is running the government.
And by the way, a celebrity doctor. Whatever that is, right? I mean, apparently the guy had some chops before he became a celebrity.
He probably did.
Well, apparently, from what I've read anyway. I mean, I don't know a lot about the guy. I just read what is there. I certainly have never interacted with him. But now that's done, in that now the structure's there. You got RFK at HHS. You have Oz at CMS, which is under HHS. So now within the structure of the government and the FDA. Oh, did you hear that Marx resigned in protest because he was told either get out or either resign or you're going to get fired?
Well, I especially like the part who's the lunatic lady right wing TV came to Trump and said something to the effect that these people aren't pure enough in our...
Oh, Loomer, that was... Oh, my God, that was crazy.
I'm not going to say it. I mean, what pure enough? Didn't we go through that once?
Well, yeah, we did. I seem to remember that... I think his name was McCarthy, wasn't it?
McCarthy, but it happened in a couple other countries, too.
Well, you had the French terror, right?
Hey, I got a quick question and regarding the tariffs. My concern always, and I dig back into my training, I guess, which is my fault and maybe my... Everything's a strength is also a weakness, right, Carl? Isn't that the way the world works? When I look at some of this and I see everybody I know, and a lot of them aren't doing so hot, I know one thing is for sure. They're going to start spending more money on stuff. And maybe someday somebody will benefit from it. It probably won't be them. So that's my problem, but... My concern is if I don't think Trump knows or cares, because I think actually he's, when it comes to numbers, real estate numbers, I bet he's really good at. The rest of the stuff is, I think he's a moron. Because it comes down to my question to you and to him, if he was sitting here, I'd say, where does the markup occur? Okay, now, for instance, my doctor told me that when she has... What was the thing with the EpiPen? It was $600?
Oh, that was... Yeah.
She told me in her office she has hypodermics where if somebody has anaphylactic shock and she goes to them or they come to her, the stuff in the shot is $1.50.
Oh, yeah, you could buy a vial.
Okay, so...
Of the stuff.
Okay, now here's where I'm going with this.
Yeah.
If I throw a 25% tariff on Greece, because they make whatever the stuff is in the EpiPen.
In the EpiPen, yeah.
Okay, well, if they're charging me a buck and... Now it's a buck and a quarter, but the markup to 500 comes on this end, I haven't solved anything. It's still going to be made in Greece.
Well, yeah, you're right. This is why all of these distortions have to come out of the medical system. And what I don't know, and I've been raving at Trump about this since the election, all right, that this has to be attacked and has to be taken care of because it's what's driving
that's where you and I and Kevin would start. One executive order would be to negate all patents after 10 years on medical stuff. And oh, by the way, if you get this kind of a markup, there's no way in hell that that company is going to be somewhere else paying no taxes.
Well, what I have a problem with that basic approach is that you only solve part of it.
I said start. The word was start.
By the way, Chief, you can't do that by EO. But what you can do by EO...
What do you mean? You can do whatever you want by EO.
No.
I'm going to be Trump for a second.
Well, you can try.
Well, he just put through the single biggest tax increase in our history that didn't go through his house.
Okay, guess what? But I know where you can go with EO because it's backed by existing law. And if I was in his shoes, you put me in the presidency, I've got 24 hours, I'm going to do my first EO. My first EO is this. All medical-related things, you are going to post a public price and everyone's going to be charged the same price. And if you don't, you're going to go to prison because I've got 15 U.S.C. Chapter 1 and my attorney general is going to have 1,000 indictments a day that are going to come out until this crap stops.
How about if you...
Again, and by the way, Congress can't stop you.
I understand. Well, we got a dash here, but how about if you're not paying taxes here, your patent's null and void?
Well, see, but again, patents, that's a law. Congress has to... You try to do executive things that contradict existing law, you're going to get
struck
in
the courts.
But the
thing of it is, I will agree with Trump on this, by the way, 100%. If I did that, you and I did it together, knowing like Obama it was illegal, it opens the conversation. Congress has their feet to the fire. And I said, I'm not so sure this is legit. We'll find out in the courts. This is really what Congress ought to be doing. Write your friggin' guy. That's how you start the conversation.
I understand it, but I can fix 90% of it by saying cut it out or go to prison.
Well, okay, but right now it is not against policy or whatever you want to call it to have your patent drug on Viagra overseas. I don't know if they did or not, but they have on a lot of them.
I get all that, Chief, but look, if where Trump is going with this is ratchet, look at what he did, you know, with the illegal immigrants, it's one crazy after another, as a lot of people would say, right? But he takes a bigger and bigger bite out of the apple with each chomp.
Okay, we got a dash, but I'm going to say
the next chomp is CMS, I'm going to cheer.
Carl, an incredibly regressive tax on people he doesn't care about.
He's going to pay that tax, too.
What is he paying in the White House? He gets a $3.5 million trip to Mar-a-Lago every weekend at our expense.
Okay, yeah, he does, but guess what? All those hotels and everything that his family and he owns, it's all going to end up on hitting their bottom line too.
Oh,
it's
to the extent that you drag money out of people, yeah. But I'm saying it's a very regressive tax, and we hope in the end it works out for somebody. But it's not going to work out.
I'm not so sure it's regressive.
What are you talking about?
I'd have to actually sit down and pencil some stuff. I'm not so sure that's regressive. I'm really not.
Who buys blue jeans from Vietnam? People can't afford the blue jeans that are made here.
Who buys Jordache blue jeans for $90 instead of a pair of whatever Walmart's house brand is for $25?
All these drugs we're talking about, all the saline solutions and all those other kinds of things, those are what poor people buy. Anyway, we'll kick it around on Tuesday because obviously there'll be more information on it.
Yeah.
What'd you think about Wayne coming up with? I think you have all your choppers. What'd you think about the 25% tax on Liechtenstein that makes dentures?
Well, if I end up, I got a bad genetic draw in the lottery when it comes to teeth, and so far I've managed to keep them all in my head. At some point, that will change. That will
maybe not.
Change.
Maybe not.
Maybe not. Well, so far I've managed to keep them all in my head. And maybe somebody will open a denture factory here in the United States.
Except for the, but you know the thing I was clumsily talking about to Kevin, and maybe we'll talk about it on Tuesday, is part of the message here is that trade is bad. Trade is good. There's always a comparative advantage between you and even the neighbor you don't like if you got a farm.
Trade is good as long as it's not used as an arbitrage lever to force things outside of trade.
I get that. And it shouldn't also be that the farmer next to you does better than you because he adopted 2 10-year-olds and makes them work. I mean, I get that.
Yeah, exactly.
I get that. But by and large, there is an economic concept called comparative advantage, where even if people, everything they do costs more money than everything you do, it's still actually better for you to get some stuff from them because you do even better on your end.
No argument.
That's a very hard concept to teach.
Well, but you know what? If I can make $100 an hour, but it costs me $50 to have my car fixed, then I'm better off paying the guy than doing it myself.
Right.
Okay? Simply because I can make $100 and I spend $50. So right. I'm plus $50 on that transaction.
S&P futures are coming back here. We're only down 112. Yeah. We were down over 3%. Now we're only down 2%.
How can I even say that,
for God's sake?
Oh, Chief, come on, man. You know what? Perspective here, my friend.
Yes, perspective.
If you take a look at the S&P, we'd have to trade 4,200 to just be back to the trend line going back to like 2018, 2016, 2017, 2018, all the way through 2020.
At this rate, we're there next Friday.
Well, guess what? If we get there, we're just back to the trend line. That's not even a crash.
Except for the part... The people lose way more on the way down.
Well,
except
for the part that people were in the Mag 7 on leverage and oops.
Yeah, oops. All right, have a good weekend, buddy. S&P futures, like I said, down 119. NASDAQ futures down 432. That actually is better. Labor report was a good one. So we'll be back on Monday to tell everybody all about it.
That's all, folks.